Just this week, there's been a lot of news going on about climate change. It seems that our temperatures are going up. There are all sorts of crises in the mill. More rainfall in some parts, more heat waves in other parts. And in fact, I think it was on Thursday in Wyndham in Western Australia, they were forecasting a top of 47 degrees, which is unbearable and really unbelievable. Merinda Garrett is an interior designer, a thought leader and co-founder of The Soulful Home. And Merinda has a few ideas about how we can make a difference in our own home. Merinda, thanks for joining us on Australia Overnight.
You're welcome, Alan. It's really nice to speak with you.
Merinda, what sort of differences can we make when it comes to decorating our house, building our home? What should we be looking at?
I think we need to be really strategic about the way we design our homes, and then afterwards the way that we behave within the home. I think it's there's so many different practices that we can connect with within the home that will help us reduce our energy consumption, our water consumption, and the ways in which we heat and cool our home or even prepare for a hot day is crucial, and it's really easy to execute different techniques to do that.
And you don't have to forsake so much to do it?
No, I don't think so. I think it's being mindful of the way that the weather plays out and preparing our home for that. So, for instance, if we know that there's going to be a 47 degree day, God forbid, that sounds extremely hot. You know, if we know it's going to be a cooler night the night before, open up the whole house. If we feel that it's appropriate to do that and it's safe to do that, allow the fresh air to blow through the house. And then when you feel it warming up in the morning, close everything down, close your blinds, close your curtains, and keep the cool air in. To the point that when you start feeling discomfort within the, you know, in terms of temperature, then we turn on our air conditioner. We don't sort of mindlessly keep our air conditioner going relentlessly on hot days. We actually become a bit more aware of nature's cycles. I think being more connected to nature's cycles and being aware of what we can do within the home, if we're mindful of that, it's quite profound, actually, how much we can also reduce our electricity bills by doing it this way.
Indeed. I've got to say, you mentioned water a while ago, and look, I just do my best to conserve water. In fact, I've got a couple of buckets in my bath in the bathroom, and the distance between where my hot water system is to where the water comes out, it's around about 5 litres of water that would be going straight down the gurgler if I didn't save it. But I save it, goes into a small tank which waters all my pot plants and things like that. But I'm still amazed at how much water I use. You know, I don't have long showers, but I get my water bill. I think, you know, surely I can't be using that much.
I know. I think we've become a bit complacent now that the, in inverted commas, drought is over. Some of us may be reverting back to our old sort of water use practices, but things like only using cold water when we wash our clothes in our clothes washers, and only putting it on once it's full. The same with our dishwasher, not necessarily using cold water, but making sure that the dishwasher is full before we put it on. And it's sort of being more aware of, okay, well, if I have a convenient task like putting the dishwasher on, am I doing it in a way that's being mindful of my energy use, or am I doing it merely for convenience? And I think it's really key here that we don't feel like we're being bad, in inverted commas, if we're not doing that. I think it's about bringing awareness to the fact that there is so much we can do which is positive, like, for instance, drying our clothes outside rather than in a dryer. I mean, I've spent 4.5 years in San Francisco in the USA, and I was really surprised by how the culture of the dryer is endemic in every home. Like, every home uses a dryer to dry their clothes. They don't use fresh air. I think we Australians do more so, absolutely. But I think it's just the practices that we have within the home that rely on energy use, that rely on water use. It's just about going, oh, okay, so if I do this, what is the impact of it? And it's just about being aware and just changing a few things that normally we may not think about.
I sort of feel sorry for people who live in high-rise apartment buildings, you know, up on the 30th floor, for example, with a balcony. You know, they're sort of very restricted, aren't they, as to how they can dry their clothes? I guess that they're the ones who really do have clothes dryers and use them, because a lot of body corporates don't like seeing clothes hanging over the balcony.
Absolutely, you're quite right, Alan. And I think a solution to that might be, well, if you do live in a high-rise apartment and you have an open space, and it's, you know, it is required that you keep the balcony clear,
yes,
for, you know, visual reasons, that perhaps you can open a window within your apartment and have an air, like a clothes dryer or,
yes,
air dryer,
true,
close to the window,
true,
so that the sunlight hits it, or it might get a breeze, so you can sort of invite that practice in, even though there may be sort of limitations as to how you do it.
Yeah, quite true. I did that when I lived in an apartment a few years ago, and I actually had one of those clothes airers in my bedroom, which opened out onto a balcony. So, you know, opened the doors and the breeze came through, and you'd be amazed how you can dry your clothes quite simply. Marinda, when it comes to furnishing your home, is there any particular sort of furniture we should be looking at which might be conducive to, you know, helping us with climate change?
Yes, so I think really understanding the origin of the product that you're using. So, for instance, looking at whether it was made in China or Australia, looking at whether for instance, you're buying a mattress, what sort of chemicals have been used to, you know, within the foam of the mattress. There's so many different ways we can look at it. I mean, if we look at the materials of the furniture that we use, I mean, nowadays still it's a lot of timber furniture is sustainable wood produced in plantations, but can we check that? I think it's important that we actually look to see if it was, and if it wasn't, is there an alternative that was grown in a sustainable way? So it's just, again, it's like food, you know, checking labels on food to see whether it's got sugar or things we shouldn't be eating in it. We can do the same thing with furniture and textiles that we invite into the home. It's been, I don't know if you've heard of Paul Hawkins. He's an amazing guy who has just produced a book called Drawdown, which talks about industry that is drawing down carbon from the atmosphere. And one of the things he speaks about in that book is bamboo. And bamboo is being a sustainable material that we can make furniture out of, we can make paper out of, we can make textiles out of. And so I'm hoping to see more product on the market that is produced by sustainably grown material that doesn't require a lot of water, that is fast growing, and that has the potential to be made into lots of different products.
Funny you mentioned bamboo. I've noticed recently you can buy a linen to put on your beds, pillowcases made out of bamboo, and even more recently, bamboo underwear.
Yeah, and it's so soft. Have you tried it?
No.
It's amazing.
I have a bamboo shirt and I love it. It's fantastic.
Oh, Alan, you're already on the bandwagon.
I haven't got to the underwear yet, and I've got so much linen in my cupboard, I'm not in the market to buy any new linen for a while. One other thing, too, you sound like you would be someone who would be advocating reuse instead of just saying, oh, God, this old dining room suite, I'm just not going to chuck it out on the nature strip. I'm going to see if I can find a home for it somewhere. You'd be a reuse person, wouldn't you?
Yeah, well, you know, there's this whole kind of movement when it comes to interiors, which is about upcycling and reclaiming materials and repurposing furniture. And I'm very much an advocate for that. My house is actually filled with pieces that I've collected along the way that have a narrative that I can speak to. So I understand who made it and what the story of their manufacturing is and who the person is. And I think there's so much resonance with pieces that have had a journey, you know, whether it's an antique or whether it's an industrial piece of furniture, like an old school chair that you found. You can really appreciate the aesthetic, because often it's born out of function rather than aesthetic. And it was, you know, created in a time where, you know, the handcraft and the craftsmanship that it takes to build these pieces is really a dying art. So I would say to people who have got pieces that they've fallen out of love with, maybe, you know, gift it to the Salvation Army or some other kind of charity group that can on-sell it. Or there may be people that you can swap furniture with that may have admired that piece and they've got something that you might like. So there's so many, like the sharing economy is very much emergent in you know, sharing what we have or swapping what we have. And I think that's a really fun way to reinvigorate our interiors as well.
I know we have to keep the wheels of retail going, but it seems there is so much furniture around and people do fall out of love with it very, very easily and just throw it out. And it seems like such a terrible waste, doesn't it?
Oh, I know. And I think, you know, we have to be very mindful, I believe, of the stories we're being told about the new and the value of the new and what it brings to your home. And I think as Australians, we have this vision of, you know, our little plot of land and a home that's ours. But there's also a lot of meaning behind bringing in things we've loved and used before and reinstating it in a different way into our home. And it might be, you know, a legacy piece from a family member or, again, something we've swapped with someone else.
Yes.
And bringing that in is, I think it's just exciting to explore all the options. And I think there is a flooding of the market of new product that is responding to our needs. And I think if we reduce the need by being more considered in the way that we consume, we'll end up with interiors that are kind of more reflective of who we are as people and less responsive to what we're being shown on television as an aspirational story.
Merinda, when it comes to architecture, we have all sorts of architecture throughout our cities. You know, the modern houses, you know, massive homes being built on tiny blocks of land with no garden or anywhere for kids to play. Is this the sort of architecture you condone, or would you rather see it? Perhaps the homes a little bit smaller with a little more play area outside.
Yeah, I'm afraid to say that we've become a little bit seduced by the idea of a bathroom for every person in the house and, you know, the audio visual room for separate, you know, watching of screens.
Yeah.
And I think there is a way to reimagine the Australian home that responds to our need for community, our need for connectedness to our family and to our loved ones, to have more open space to grow food, to put our water tanks, to enjoy sunshine and the cycles of nature. I mean, I'm kind of my heart hurts every time I see a new development go up where you see that tiny eaves and big air conditioning units, and then, you know, we're told that that's, you know, 5-star rating when it comes to energy efficiency. But, you know, how efficient is it in bringing us together and connecting us to each other? You know, the scourge of the screen within the home is something I think we need to be really cognizant of, and of what that creates in terms of family dynamics. And for me, when I meet a new client and we're talking about how a home can work for a family, I do ask my clients to question the role of screens within the family and how it's used, and whether it's used as, you know, an easy tool to distract the kids if we want to do something else as parents. And, you know, the conversational piece of sitting down and having a meal together without any, you know, interruption in terms of screen or music, just having that togetherness time to debrief after the end of a day, it's invaluable. It's just one of those things I think we need to invite back into the family culture. And I think having so many rooms where different people can do different activities isn't supportive of that.
I agree. Merinda Garrett, you're my sort of person, absolutely my sort of person. Merinda, can you tell me about your group? It's called The Soulful Home. The Soulful Home.
It's actually my heart project. It's something I'm very, very passionate about. It's called The Soulful Home, and the mantra is live soulfully, consume mindfully, and design beautifully. And anyone who'd like to know more, please reach out. I'd love to either chat with you on the phone or go to my website at merindagarrett.com, and let's have a conversation, because this is the kind of conversation I think we all need to be having. And yes, Alan, you're my people too.
Merinda Garrett, been fantastic talking to you today. Best wishes to you, and a season's greetings. May it be filled with fun and frivolity and good times for you.
And to you too also, Alan. So lovely chatting with you.